This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It's been an interesting week. In more ways than one. So, I went to the dentist last Friday. Got my teeth cleaned. Got my teeth deep cleaned. Had a new dental hygienist. She did a great job. Cleaned my teeth really well. But it was more vigorous than I was used to. So my teeth were a little sensitive for a couple of days, but that's only because of the vigor that with which my teeth were cleaned. On the other hand, I ate some nuts after I had my teeth cleaned, and I think I chipped a little, either chipped a piece of my tooth out or chipped a piece of a filling out. Thankfully, it does not hurt. So I had a call into the dentist to say, could we take a look and maybe we can patch a little bit. The particular tooth that it did this to is a tooth that is discolored because when the filling was filled years ago, they actually drilled too close to the surface of the tooth. Maybe they had to, I don't know. And then packed it full. So you can actually see the discoloration, and I have suspected for some time that that tooth eventually will give way because there's just not as much structure there as there is otherwise. On the other hand, they said everything looked good with my teeth, so yay. And, you know, no gingivitis, no infections, no nothing, so we're good there, and we're just going to keep puttering along and see how long we can keep these teeth. So I'm hoping that the dentist can just kind of patch a little bit, because the piece that fell off is pretty small. So, and it's hidden, can't really see it. So we'll see. They were asking if there was a possibility that I could come in tomorrow. Unfortunately, we already have plans for tomorrow, and so that didn't work out, but we'll figure it out. It will be just fine. One of the exciting things that happened is when I was going down to get my teeth cleaned, and I go down in costume when I do, so I was leaving my mother-in-law's house because I dropped in over there just to have a chance to go to the bathroom, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, get back in the costume, yada, yada, yada. I pulled my car out and I started leaving, and I put my foot down on the brake to slow down, and the pedal went all the way to the floors. I was like, whoa. But then I put my foot down again, and then I had brakes, and I thought, you know what? I bet I can get down there, because I would have had to reschedule with the dentist and all that kind of stuff. So I limped it down there, did my dental appointment, and then limped it back to the church on the north side of town, all the way across town, and just left it there for a couple of days. I am now back in my car because we got the brakes fixed today. However, my wife's van is still at the church, so we're going to be shuffling cars, so the excitement continues. This week at work, we've been prepping for a big move, big database move, so we've basically just been testing all week. And then just before I left today, we heard from a couple of users that they couldn't get into what's called the financial reporting site. And I checked some permissions, and sure enough, they had disappeared from the permissions. And I was like, what? And we have a couple others who have disappeared from the permissions as well. They all happen to be candidates, which is very strange. We don't know exactly what would cause that, but I'm out for the weekend, so I arranged a handoff to another programmer who actually built that subsystem. And hopefully he can take a look tomorrow and see what there is to see and kind of figure out what's happening, because it's weird. It's just weird. Somewhere something is getting nuked. And and it just like started happening today. And it's like, what? So welcome to technology. Anyway, so that's good. On the writing front, I did upload all the files for book 19. And so hopefully by the time I get home, those will have been reviewed so I can order beta copies. And then I need to send out the email to say, hey, we look like we're ready to go. And see what beta readers will come back and read book 19. And then I will probably start working on book 20 next week, which will be ahead of schedule. That's at least 2 weeks ahead of schedule, because book 19 came in about 10,000 words less than the standard books have been coming in. Although I checked back, and in fact, older books came in at just over 140,000 words, whatever it is, just over 400 pages. So older books have been coming in at that, and it's just within the recent dozen books or so that I've been consistently hitting at 450 pages-ish, so... Yeah, you know, it's fine. I got the story told that I wanted to get told, and we'll just launch into book 20 and see what happens. But again, I'm back to that analogy of being dropped in the middle of the forest, in the dark, in the middle of the night, in a fog. And I have my little trusty flashlight that's not very strong, and I'm going to be wandering my way out of the woods again. Which is always interesting. But at this point, I have written 19 books. I think Jesus will be with me through the last five. And once I get book 20 done, there's only four more to go. So this is interesting. And I may have mentioned this last week, but I had kind of a fundamental and profound shift. That I wasn't really expecting, but it just sort of came out of nowhere, and I was like, oh, that's what happens. And so I still have to kind of reorient everything that I was thinking about to make it all fit and make sense. But initially, it does make sense that that would happen. So, you know, it's good to have that big structure. Yeah, that fits with the big structure. I just have to work out all the little stuff. And some of that will just work out in the mix. So, it'll be fine. It'll be just fine. Costumes are good. I'm cautiously optimistic. I think I mentioned that I'm working on a costume for the 25th anniversary of The Lion King on Broadway. And if you have seen the costumes for those or seen the masks that they make that sit on top of the performers' heads, they're really amazing and they're large and they're gorgeous. And I don't have any pattern for this, so I'm making it up as I go along. And I wasn't sure exactly how I was going to pull this off. But you know what? I'm cautiously optimistic at this point. I've got some pieces in place. And they seem like they're okay. And I have a path forward that seems to make sense. So we'll just see what happens. I am almost back to the house and we are shuffling cars. So I have to kind of go quick. I came across a quick talk by Michael Levin, which I had mentioned Michael Levin before, but I highly recommend going and looking on YouTube for Michael Levin and specifically the little conversation that he has on biohacking our way to health. Some of this stuff I have already mentioned before, but this is fascinating to me. And I don't think that any Michael Levin is not pausing to say, hold it. But it's interesting because he has come at the whole cellular mechanics. He has come at life from an engineering perspective. And it's fascinating that when he talks about this, I've heard him talk in the past about this, and he talks about life, he apologizes for using engineering terminology. Because he already knows how some people who are waiting out in the wings, who are intelligent design people, he already knows how they're going to react to a bunch of stuff that he's saying. And he is just trying to blunt that by saying, well, we're just using the language because it's easier to describe that way. And my response to some of that stuff is, you know, if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, it's probably a duck. And so if it's easier to describe something in engineering terms, maybe it's because it was engineered. But anyways, I have mentioned him in the past. There was just a little extra information in this that I thought, oh, this is very good. And it will be fairly short because I do have to check on my beloved. And then if she is up for it, we have to run back into the church because her van is at the church because I can only drive one car at a time because we don't have self-driving cars yet. Anyways, and I do not have my garage door opener, so I am going to need to punch the button on my phone and get the garage door open. But Michael Levin, you know, starts off this talk by reviewing that a lot of times when we think about biological processes, we often think in terms of, well, that has DNA in it. The DNA is like the blueprints. We go ahead and we just do things by the blueprints, and then that's how evolution happens, and then everything's very mechanistic, and it just sort of rolls up from there. But he, in his investigations, has come to a rather different conclusion and has, in fact, shown through his experimentation that there is some really interesting things that are going on in terms of what the individual cells are capable of. And from that perspective, there are new opportunities, hence the title, Biohacking Our Way to Health. He said, for instance, you can take oak leaves, and they're typically flat green things, and you might look at those cells and say, okay, so the genome of the oak, it has information that enables them to make this flat green structure. But if prompted by a parasite, such as a wasp embryo, in fact, these same cells can make a large, round, spiky red object called a gall. So you've got cells that are already purposed for a thing that by sending the right signals to, you can have those cells mutate into something else. And he says, one of the amazing things that we're finding out is that standard outcome of where cells end up in the body and what they're doing is actually an option space. And that option space is a latent space of possibility that is huge and diverse and very hard to guess. So, in fact, if you know the right messages that you send to these cells that look like they will only do one thing, you can actually cause them to do other things. He says, almost every aspect of biomedical needs, all of these things boil down to one fundamental problem. How do we convince a group of cells to build a nice, healthy organism? We may not want to, in fact, we are not going to be able to micromanage all of that gene expression, all of the cells, all the stem cell activity towards the complex state that we're trying to achieve. But, this is my paraphrase, if you know the right messaging to send, you might be able to regrow limbs or provide new eyes or normalize a tumor. And he said, if we can take advantage of the native competencies of cells that are already good at solving certain kinds of problems, we might have the ability to achieve large-scale outcomes that are too complex for us to micromanage. So, in other words, one of the things they've been able to do, he goes on to say, simple example, the frog, which is an animal that normally does not regenerate its legs as an adult, we've discovered is that actually we can give the cells a trigger to take them down the path of building an entire leg. So a frog that normally doesn't regenerate a leg, they can put in certain signals, and that frog will regrow that leg, not because they're telling the frog exactly how to rebuild the leg, how many toes, how long it's supposed to be, all that detail. But at a macro level, saying they communicated with a simple prompt that causes them to take the path down into a morphous space of moving that injured state to a regenerative state. They've already done this with frogs. He says, so all the tools of neuroscience and behavioral science, they all work in other spaces, in morphological spaces and physiological spaces. So he said, this is the time for biomedicine. And then he talks about the Xenobot, and I've mentioned the Xenobot earlier. He said, at simplest level, a Xenobot is what happens when you take some skin off of an early frog. An early frog embryo. You take away from it all the instructive interactions and all the hacking that normally causes those cells to have this kind of boring two-dimensional life. And you ask them, well, what do you want to do now that you're not being controlled by these other cells? And what they do is self-assemble into this round little thing we call the Xenobot that starts to move around on its own. Okay, it rows against water, against the bottom of the petri dish that they're setting us, but it also does things like spontaneously turn around. Another example of one of the amazing things that these Xenobots can do is that they can do something called kinesmatic self-reproduction. So remember that we've made it possible for these things to reproduce on their own. So remember that we've made it impossible for these things to reproduce on their own because they're just skin. They have no neurons. None of the rest of the systems that are needed for frog reproduction are there. But if you provide them with enough loose materials, other loose skin cells, what they do is they run around and they collect those materials into little piles, and they sort of shape them into these little piles and make little snowballs out of them. That little ball matures into the next generation of Xenobots. This is really important. There's no neurons here. There's no intelligence here. There's nothing that we would consider to be a sophisticated DNA replication system or any kind of genetic reproductive system, and yet somehow these cells coalesce, and just in the coalescing of these skin cells, they attain enough motivation to putter around on a petri dish, and if you give them other cells to play with, they pack them into balls so that those things can become alive. How in the world did this come about? because at the most fundamental level, there is some type of inherent drive. So he says, this is basically von Neumann's dream of a robot that goes around, finds materials in the environment, and makes a copy of itself. And none of this was obvious at all from what we know about frogs and tadpoles and their genome. So we're just scratching the surface now of what we're capable of. We're actively researching their ability to sense and remember what preferences they have, and they can learn and all of these things. So one answer to what a Xenobot is that it's a biorobotics platform where we can take advantage of the self-assembling properties of frog skin cells to make useful biological robots. That sounds like a lot of complexity to me. That sounds like a mystery. It's not just, he says, it's not just you could make living machines, synthetic living machines that do specific things. It's actually a sandbox in which you learn the rules of morphogenesis. You can learn to prompt the system and actually understand what else it is capable of. And I think that the Xenobots are just the first harbingers of a huge option space of novel bodies, novel minds that are going to be with us in the coming decades. This is just the first step into that world of truly diverse intelligence. And he says, anytime you do this, there are people that get worried. He said, I'm not a clinician, but I'm here to tell you that I get phone calls daily from people with the most unbelievable medical needs. Things are not fine. I consider it to be, he says, an absolute moral imperative for all of us in the community move forward with this work so that we can provide a better lived experience for everyone on Earth. We can think carefully about the ethics of all these things. We think carefully about the ethics of all these things, but that calculus is just not what could go wrong. That calculus is what is already wrong if you do nothing. To me, this is a fascinating development because I have mentioned in the past the idea of the three waves of science. That the first wave is simple observation, and it doesn't seem that complicated, and you can make little clay animals, and you can say, see that animal, oh, that's interesting, I can do the same thing, but I just can't make the animal move. And so you have this very naive idea about what creation is. And it's okay for God to exist, because he's really not that far from you. And then as you go further on and you realize the complexity and you start to dissect and you see all the organs and internal organs and you have no idea what this stuff is doing, then God gets more and more awesome and more intimidating, and now we push him away because we don't want somebody who's that complex and intimidating. But then the third wave comes when we realize that this whole system is so much more complex than we could ever imagine. It has so many more capabilities, and the farther we get down into it, we see that it's more and more and more and more. And there's no way it could ever happen on its own. And I think this step with discovering how complex cells are and what they are capable of is another step along this journey. And it means that at some point, yes, we're going to have to use engineering language in order to better explain what's happening. And in the process of using that engineering language, at some point, we're going to have to say, why do the principles of engineering fit so well with what we're seeing? And why is it engineering that is orders of magnitude more complex and more adaptive and more wondrous than anything we can imagine? And maybe at that point, we begin to entertain the idea of a master architect and a master engineer. And it will be fascinating to watch this process. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.